Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. U.S. equities had one of their best weeks of the year, lifted by optimism about tariffs being dialed back, as well as decent corporate earnings reports. Joining us on this Monday morning for the CIO Strategy Snapshot to discuss this all, glad to welcome back Jason Draho, Head of Asset Allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. Jason, great to be at the table with you to begin another trading week. Welcome back.
Good morning, Dan. Good to be here. It actually feels like it's a relatively quiet Monday so far compared to some of the prior Mondays we've had recently.
And a lot of positives to talk about with respect to recent market activity, which we'll cover today. So let's begin with that market performance, Jason. What exactly happened last week? What do you make of recent performance?
Well, it was certainly a positive week for the markets, one of the best we've had all year for U.S. equities. The S&P 500 was up 4.6%. The NASDAQ was up 6.4%. The Mag 7, you know, had its best week in 3 years, up 9.4% for the week overall. So, you know, very positive, you know, developments. You know, volatility across the markets fell. The VIX fell nearly 5 points down to 25. So, you know, it's lowest in, you know, since early April. Bond volatility also closed at, you know, at its lowest level since Liberation Day on April 2nd. I mentioned the tech sector and NASDAQ did well. So AI related kind of baskets were a lot of them kind of, you know, posted double digit gains. What was kind of going on here? Well, you know, certainly positive, you know, kind of news flow, you know, regarding tariffs and the Fed. From a positioning perspective, you saw hedge funds kind of doing more short covering, perhaps buying longs, some systematic strategies buying. I would say though it's more of a little bit more of a technical story than it was a fundamental. And of course, more kind of taking down left tail downside risks, because of these policy pivots we'll get to in a second. The sentiment overall, I think, amongst investors, certainly among institutional investors that, you know, we speak to here about, remain in a pretty kind of bearish camp and believe that, you know, equities will go lower. But for 1 week, at least, it was a bit of a reprieve. This week, you know, depending on, of course, how the data plays out, but it has the potential to be like another positive week, or at least a lot of catalysts are coming up, because we have 41% of the S&P 500 market cap is, you know, reporting. I think it's about 180 companies out of the 500. Four of the Mag 7 will report. So again, these could be, you know, quite market moving events. And earnings have, you know, come in fine, okay, you know, all things considered. You know, what the focus really on, like, where do we go from here? Because there's a lot of concern about the data being backward looking, which is why on Wednesday when we get to Q1 GDP estimate, like the first estimate, it's going to be very noisy, you know, because of inventory, because of these gold imports kind of distorted the data. So the key thing to see is, like, where is the private sector sort of final demand? That's the real kind of takes out sort of the volatility. And later in the week, we'll get also for March, the personal consumption expenditure data to see, like, you know, how our consumers continue to kind of hold up, which again could pivot as we go forward, but those are key data points. And then on Friday, maybe the most significant economic data point for the week is the April non-farm payrolls. Consensus is around 135,000. So a number that would suggest still kind of solid labor market, not cracking, yet it's moderating, you know, bit by bit. A number well below that in the 50,000 range will certainly get investors concerned that the economy is slowing, that you're seeing signs of tariffs. That actually might be, you know, the bad news is good news if it gets the Fed to move more quickly, all else equal. A stronger number would be good, but it also means that policymakers, both fiscal, trade with Trump and, you know, with the Fed, may actually be, you know, incentivized to delay a little bit. So a lot of potential news that could move the markets again. But last week, at least, was a good week for the first time in a while.
Now, Jason, you mentioned that investors reacted positively to news flow regarding tariffs. We even saw Treasury Secretary Bessent on the morning programming today, consistent with that dial back tone recently from the White House. You spoke a bit about the Fed as well. Is there reason to be optimistic, or are investors perhaps getting ahead of themselves?
Well, at least in terms of the Fed, you know, this time, you know, last Monday we were talking, there was the market reacting to these reports of Trump criticizing, you know, Fed Chair Jay Powell, saying they should cut rates, kind of calling into question whether the Fed independence, which of course the markets did not like last Monday. Later in the week, you know, President Trump basically said he doesn't intend to fire Powell, so that sort of at least put that a little bit of a fire out for the time being. So that was one factor. The bigger factor was the kind of change in language, maybe the softening of tone regarding tariffs, with both Trump but also Bessent, you know, sort of saying, you know, with regards to China, that, you know, these levels are unsustainable. Like, you know, basically, you if tariffs are over 100% on either side, you effectively stop all trade whatsoever. And there's evidence of shipping and shipping containers and lack of shipping that's already materialized.
Like an embargo.
Effectively an embargo, even though it's not official, but that's right. The practical effect. So that's not sustainable. Certainly there was, reports of the CEOs of Walmart, Target, in meeting with President Trump and basically saying, if these stay in place and these levels, in 2 to 3 weeks, you'll see store shelves start to become empty and prices are going to go up. And that certainly kind of helped some of the language. So that was probably the biggest deal is, there's some de-escalation. Now what the markets will want to see is signs of progress on negotiations between the administration and other countries. There were reports late last week that the administration has laid out a framework to negotiate with 18 countries, 6 every week, over 3 weeks in a rotating fashion until the 90-day deadline is coming up. That is still a lot of negotiations in a short amount of time.
Sure.
But it's at least they're trying to give some guidance.
There's a roadmap.
There's a roadmap that, you can sort of, say the roadmap has not been particularly clear, so signs of progress would be beneficial. Also today, this is Monday, April 28th, there's an election in Canada today. That will provide, obviously, some clarity of the governing, who's going to govern Canada going forward. And once that happens, then the possibility of negotiations between Canada, the U.S., and Mexico, could proceed. And it could happen, relatively soon, at least in terms of meetings in Washington with, the various, leaders. So that's something else to kind of, provide a potential pot of catalyst in going forward. But that's really what was last week was briefly, challenging Fed independence, backing it off, but more softening of language on trade and tariffs. And that could continue this week. But we will start to need as investors signs of progress, relatively soon.
So if we put tariffs to the side for a moment, Jason, the main market debate right now is about U.S. exceptionalism and whether it can continue. This was actually a topic of the House View, the monthly letter from Chief Investment Officer Mark Haefeli, and your latest blog titled An Exceptional Debate. What are your thoughts on this particular debate, Jason?
Well, the thing about this debate is it reminds me a little bit of this debate like a year ago, 2 years ago, like this, are we going to have a soft landing, hard landing, no landing? Mm-hmm. People kind of toss all these terms, yet it's like, well, what do you mean? What do you mean by no landing versus soft landing? Like, you don't really kind of quantify it. And the same thing with this exceptionalism debate, like what it actually means, like what are we talking about in some sort of, more kind of quantifiable way? So the purpose of, my blog was to try and, how can we think about this exceptionalism? Is this, by some sort of quantifiable metric, is this ending or not ending? Because that's really what matters for sort of investment, implications. Just sort of saying it's ending, that by itself isn't very helpful. So, in the note, I kind of highlight what I would say, at least four, ways you can think about U.S. exceptionalism from an investing perspective. There certainly could be more. It's not exhaustive. But one is what is actual U.S. GDP growth compared to other countries? A second is what is trend growth, kind of the structural long-term trend growth of the U.S. versus other countries? A third is the return on capital invested in U.S. Think particularly of equity investments, but all investments, again, relative to your return on capital and investments elsewhere. And the fourth is kind of a valuation premium for U.S. assets relative to the rest of the world. And so, kind of go through and try to give some perspective, what has made the U.S. exceptional on all these four metrics, and then could this continue or not? I think for U.S. growth, that's probably the one where it's clearest that exceptionalism is likely to fade. Mm-hmm. So in 2023, 2024, those 2 years, the U.S. grew at an annualized rate of 2.85%. By comparison, the Eurozone grew at 0.6% and Japan at around 0.9%. So at least almost 2 percentage points higher than Europe for 2 consecutive years, which is pretty significant. But if we think about this year, 2025 and 2026, just taking consensus forecasts, where what is expected, now the Bloomberg, the consensus for the U.S. is to go at 1.5 and 1.6% respectively this year and in 2026. In Europe, it's 0.8% and 1.2%. So now you're talking about gaps of 40 basis points, maybe 70 basis points, much narrow. So again, that exceptional growth for the rest of the world, that is convergence. So I think that is fair to say that's sort of, ending, for at least temporarily. But I think a key thing is really, to me, the exceptionalism story starts to kind of hinge on things like long-term trend growth rate. Now, investors assume in the U.S. it's about 2%. The Fed's official number would be 1.8. In Europe, it's going to be sub 1.5% for relative perspective. The fact that the U.S. is growing at nearly 3% for the past 2 years, and even higher if you go to 21 and 22, that it did raise questions about, well, maybe U.S. trend growth is higher. maybe the neutral rate sort of associated with that is structurally higher. We do know that a surge of immigration helped push up potential growth because potential growth or trend growth, you know, is based off of like, what is your growth of your labor force and what is productivity growth? Mm-hmm. Labor force certainly surged. We know that won't continue. So that aspect won't continue. But that's something we knew back in January before the administration took place. And in our last update on sort of this Roaring Twenties thesis we've been talking about for a couple of years, that came out right, you know, right around or right before the inauguration, we did say that, you know, it really would rely on productivity growth being elevated going forward. And for the past 2 years, or if you take even the last 5 years, if you average it out, productivity growth in the U.S. is around 2%, which would suggest trend growth of like 2.5%. Now, whether that will continue, that's the open question. But that, to me, is the kind of the key. If that can stay high, if productivity growth in the U.S. can stay high, that exceptionalism can't continue. Tariffs, a trade war, supply chain disruptions, those are not, you know, kind of, you know, positive for productivity.
Right.
Creating uncertainty about all this path that maybe causes companies to delay investment, also not positive for productivity growth. At the same time, AI developments will continue to come down the pipeline. We're going to get, of course, with the Mag 7, probably, you know, as they report earnings. Yes, they continue to invest. This secular trend and theme is still very much in play. And if anything, it might incentivize companies, if they have to deal with higher, you know, supply chains, more disruptive supply chains, is use technology to get more efficiency. So it could actually, you know, can offset it all. But that, to me, is like, I think to say that U.S. exceptional is ending, I think it's part too premature. And just, you know, briefly on sort of return on capital, it's structurally higher in the U.S. by at least 5 percentage points, say, versus Europe. It's been bifurcating since the financial crisis in 2008. Some of this reflects the nature of the companies, but it also kind of reflects that, you know, U.S. management teams are very good at extracting, you know, profitability, efficiency gains. You have very kind of flexible and deep liquid capital markets, labor markets, I think, that all sort of benefit U.S. companies. A lot of growth opportunities are in the U.S. that have high returns on, you know, on kind of capital. That isn't likely to change kind of anytime soon. And then finally, on valuation premiums, look, people have paid a premium to own U.S. assets, mm-hmm. equities, credit, government bonds, even you could say the U.S. dollar. That is certainly going to be dinged a little bit in the past month is consistent with that. But I'd say it also has to be viewed in the context of 2 or 3 months ago, U.S. assets were really expensive. You know, the forward multiple on the S&P was at 22. Now it's down to 20. 22 puts you in like the 90th plus percentile. Like, this is elevated. And same thing with kind of other metrics. The dollar by most measures was expensive. So I think before we sort of jumped into, you know, too many conclusions, these premiums are likely to come down, but this is maybe a bit of a reversion to mean as a first cut. Sure. What we need to see is, you know, even if you're holding constant the state of the economy, we're not going to recession, do you see a further sort of derating of U.S. assets? And that, to me, would be a sign the market is actually taking that down. Go back to what we began with. Performance last week was good. If it continues right. to be good, it's a sign that for all this talk, investors are still willing to kind of, you know, to pay up for, right. for U.S. assets. And the last thing, I'd just go back to this long-term trend. Over the past month, the market implied measure for the neutral Fed funds rate, which is a function of growth, has not actually come down. It stays around 4%. So if you look at some of the market pricing, it's actually not that consistent with the idea that suddenly U.S. exceptionalism ending. The one area where it is with the U.S. dollar, which, you know, has continued to weaken and may continue to weaken.
Well, Jason, thank you for weighing in with your thoughts on this debate. I want to point our listeners to Jason's blog, An Exceptional Debate, to read further into this topic, available up on ubs.com/CIO, as is the latest House View. That's a good place to end on, Jason. I mentioned the latest UBS House View, updated as of last week. So can you walk us through the current main messages in focus and what CIO's main investment recommendations are today?
Well, sort of building off of this sort of exceptionalism theme, you know, there's areas where certainly, you know, could be challenged, but also things that I think you'd be premature to get, you know, too pessimistic, which is why, like, U.S. equities are, we kind of deem it as attractive on a more medium-term horizon. I think near-term, given how much they bounced last week, they may be bumping up towards kind of a top end of a range, just given that there's still, you know, a lot of uncertainty regarding, you know, tariffs, how this will play out. I think the markets are reacting, you know, with some positively, with some justification to the news. But they're not cheap, and we have not seen actually any, you know, the evidence of the slowdown in growth, which is still likely to come, perhaps not until later in the summer. So we got a bit of a reprieve, but I think the reality is, you know, the common united theme across the markets is that there's a lot of volatility. And so the messages, the key message that we have are all kind of based off the idea that, you know, you want to look through it, you want to manage it, and you want to take advantage of volatility in different ways. So, you know, one message would be like to phase into equities. Mm-hmm. So as we see, you know, pullbacks in the market, we saw one that's, you know, when we went attractive on equities a couple weeks ago, you know, that was an opportunity. We think there'll probably be some more pullbacks in as well. And phasing into, you know, areas of the market that have had sort of, you know, sell-off opportunities. So we, you know, we do have lists and, you know, recommendations for specific opportunities in the U.S., Europe, and Asia, a pullback. The tech sector, the Mag 7, is one that has been hit, you know, relatively hard this year. And so, again, we like that theme. So that's an area to kind of continue to engage. There's still a lot of uncertainty. So from a rates perspective and fixed income perspective, you know, we kind of say seek durable income, you know, meaning you don't need to take a lot of credit risk to get, you know, income right now, given that things kind of, you know, do get worse, those spreads will widen. So stay kind of higher quality and don't take a lot of interest rate risk, because the 10-year, like equities, we think it's kind of range bound with 4.5%, you know, near the upper end, but it certainly could go higher versus going down to 4% if there really is kind of growth concerns. And a last message I'll highlight, sort of navigating political risks, you know, how do you do that? Well, make sure you have diversified in your portfolio. And aside from the U.S. dollar potentially weakening over time as the real sort of end of U.S. exceptionalism, you know, one of the beneficiaries is gold. I think as central banks, as investors look to diversify, find things they can hedge in their portfolio, gold is, you know, off a little bit from its highs, but I think there's a structural story there that remains, you know, relatively attractive. So those are some of the key messages in terms of how investors should try and navigate this still quite uncertain, volatile environment, even if last week was a bit of a, you know, the clouds parting, we got some sun in the spring. So,
well, Jason, thank you for keeping our listeners, our clients, current on the thinking from CIO when it comes to the investment outlook and how to navigate these recently volatile markets. So thank you for dropping by to begin another trading week, and do look forward to picking back with our conversation next Monday.
You're welcome. Have a great week.
You as well. Thank you, Jason. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/working with us. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.